sir. Mr. Kogiannis?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
My name is Lee Quinones, and I'll be serving as the acting board chairman today for your hearing. The actual hearing lead will be the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. So I will hand it over, but I think we also need to patch the phone call. Is that correct, Mr.?
Yes, sir. Mr. Kogiannis, please stay on the line. We need to connect the county attorney's office with this phone call. So stay on the line while we make that connection, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Attorney's office.
Hi, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We're trying to reach the attorney, Matt Smith. He wanted to participate telephonically in the hearing that we're holding today.
Yes, hold on just a moment, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes, sir.
We understand that you wanted to participate in the hearing this morning. We're going to connect you in on that hearing today. The Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse will be acting as a lead on the hearing. If you would just stand by for a moment, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Good morning. Mr. Kogiannis? Do we have you on the phone, sir?
Yes. Yes.
Good. Okay. Do we have Mr. Smith on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Mr. Kogiannis, have I said your name correctly? Could you please state it and your name and your ABC number for the record?
My name is Michael George Kogiannis.
Kogiannis, okay. And your ABC number?
104341.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we're appearing this morning before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and you're being heard for a 412A, which is general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, all three of those, and this hearing will be for all of those. And we became eligible for this on...
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't understand you. I can barely hear you over the phone.
Interesting. Okay. I'll try to be more direct in the microphone. Is that better?
Yes.
Is that better? Okay, good. Okay. It looks like you became eligible for this. Let me check my data. I don't know that I have the correct eligibility date. That looks a little suspect. You will become eligible October 31st of 2018. So this would be hearing whatever the results of what happens today would occur then and not immediately. I'll do just a brief summary, sir. Before I do that, I'm sorry, let me introduce the board members that are here with us today, especially since we're on the phone and you can't see us. Our video system is down, so normally you'd be able to see us. We have the Honorable Lee Quinones. We have the Honorable David Moore. We have the Honorable Michael Johnson. And my name is Gail Rittenhouse. So I'll just be reading the hearing. And I do need to apologize in advance. I've got whatever's going around, and so it affects my voice, and I sometimes need to cough. So I apologize in advance. We have a number of people in the room today, and we also have Mohave County Attorney Representative Matt Smith on the phone.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. I'll start with a brief summary, Mr. Kogiannis.
Do you want to keep it here? I can't hear. I can't understand it.
Are you having trouble hearing, sir?
Is that me?
Yes.
Is there a volume control on your phone?
It's probably I can barely hear you. I don't know. It's not clear.
Are you on speakerphone, sir, or are you talking on the phone? Sir, are you on the speakerphone, or do you have, or are you talking
I'm on the phone now.
Okay.
Is that better?
I beg your pardon?
Is it better with you on the handset instead of on the speakerphone?
I can hear you, but it's not clear.
Sir, can you hear me?
A lot of static in the background.
Sir, can you hear me?
Yes.
Is there a lot of static?
Maybe. Could you lower it down a bit so that I don't get that static?
What do you want to do?
I hear a lot of static. Can you change it?
What do you want me to do?
Yes? Hello?
Sir, yes?
This is not clear at all. Now it's even worse.
If I may, it's the acting board chairman. Mr. Kozeranis?
Yes?
Are you hard of hearing with respect?
No, I think it's the apparatus I'm using.
Okay.
Is there something wrong with this?
Mr. Kozeranis?
Yes?
Could you possibly put the CO3 back on the phone?
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't have to.
Sir, can you put the CO3 back on the phone?
What? Doctor, I guess.
Sir, is there another phone that can be used? Is he on a speaker phone, or what do you think is the problem?
I can hear you loud and clear. I believe it might be something on his end.
Are you using the same phone, the same equipment he was using?
Yes.
Do you know him? Is he hard of hearing?
I don't know.
I don't understand why he can't hear if he can.
Can you hear clearly?
Yeah, I can hear you guys loud and clear. I don't know. He's a little hard on hearing.
Okay. Well?
He's 86 years old, he says.
Right. Well, I understand. Okay. Well, we'll have to try to continue. We'll do the best we can, sir.
Okay. Do you want
me to visit your house?
Yes.
Just so that you know that I've adjusted the volume. If I do it anymore, you're going to start feeding back.
I'm afraid already. It's already echoing.
Yes?
Okay, you're back, sir.
Yes?
Go ahead, is it any better?
I can hear you.
Okay.
I thought maybe if you're a little slower.
All right, I'll be slower then. We'll start with the summary. Mr. Kojeranis is 86 years old. He's serving 25 years to life for 2 counts of murder in the first degree, which are running concurrently. This occurred on December 9th, 1993, when he was approximately 62 years old. He was convicted in a jury trial on February 9th, 1994, and he was sentenced on March 9th, 1994. He did appeal, but the conviction was affirmed on December 12th, 1995. Mr. Kojeranis has no criminal history to speak of before the instant offense. He has a good discipline history in prison with no major violations. His last discipline was in 2001, and that was disobeying an order, and it was informally resolved. This is Mr. Kojeranis' first hearing before this board. He has completed some programming while in prison, I noted a GED and a program called Thinking for a Change. His release plans, he notes, would be to live with his daughter and collect Social Security, He also indicates he's a doctor, and he may try to get his license back. Is this all correct, Mr. Kogiannis?
I beg your pardon?
Is that correct, what I stated?
Could you take that message for me? I don't understand. I am lucky.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Mr. Kogiannis?
Yes, what?
Was my summary of information about your case correct?
Was her summary about your case correct? I beg your pardon? Was her summary about your case correct? What was the summary? I'm telling you, I don't hear this thing.
So Mr. Kogiannis, can maybe they put him on speakerphone and the CO3 can help relay the information?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. What is the name of the CO3 I'm speaking with right now, sir?
CO3 Palayam.
Okay, sir, is there any chance that we can try putting him on speakerphone?
He's on speakerphone right now, sir.
And he's still not hearing anything, and are you
hearing anything? He's hearing anything, Mr. Johnson, just like that. He says if you talk like that, he can hear you.
He can hear you, but not me, probably.
Yeah.
You can put the phone there. He's talking to me at those things.
You want to try it again,
Mr.
Reynolds?
Yeah, we can try it again. Mr. Kogiannis?
Yes?
I summarized your crime, which was that you're serving 25 years to life for two concurrent murder charges, murder first degree. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this occurred on December 9th, 1993, when you were about 62 years old. Is that correct?
I beg your pardon? When you were around 62 years old. Around 60.
60 years old, okay. Thank you for that correction. You were convicted by jury trial on February 9th, 1994, sentenced on March 9th, 1994. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And you appealed, and that was affirmed on December 12th, 1995. Correct?
I didn't hear that last statement.
You appealed, and that was affirmed on December 12th, 1995.
When I appealed, and that was affirmed in December 1995.
Yes. Okay, good. Thank you, sir. Your prison discipline history has been good, with no majors.
Your discipline has been good, with no majors.
Correct. Yes, sir. Okay, and the last discipline was in 2001.
Oh, yeah. Would you repeat that, sir?
Yes, last discipline was in 2001.
Your last discipline was in 2001. What was your prison?
Your last discipline was in 2001.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. This is your first hearing before the parole board?
Yes.
Okay. And you've completed some programming in prison, a GED and a program called Thinking for Change.
Completed Thinking for Change.
Okay. And your release plans were to live with your daughter and get Social Security. Okay, and you also indicated you're a doctor and you're trying to get your license back.
My license was retired, but I have plans to be with my associates.
Okay, all right, sir. So, sir, this is your first hearing before the board. And we want to get to know you a little bit. Will you just tell us what happened the day of the crime? What happened?
I was
I just got home from my delivery, and I had two youngsters. One was 7 and the other was 9, and the 7-year-old called me over and said, "Daddy, come and get us, because they're bleeding to us." And then I said, put your sister on, who is a 9-year-old, and she was talking to me, some in the background. And she screamed, and like someone in the background said, "Get off of the phone, you little shit." And then I went over to see what happened, and the individual was not there, and I returned at 9:30 to ask him what business to be on to discipline my children when their mother was there, and he told me, "Get out of here, I'll smash it up this beer can," and then that's when the incident I started.
Okay, and what happened? Yeah, what happened?
And then I pulled out the gun and shot him.
Okay, and you shot the man and your wife as well?
I beg your pardon?
You shot both that man and your wife.
And then, I don't know, then I don't remember I guess she tried to intervene and she was shot.
Okay, who shot her?
I beg your pardon?
Who shot your wife?
I evidently I did.
Okay, evidently you don't remember?
You don't remember? No, I don't. I remember I shot the only one that had the gun. So I don't remember shooting her, but I obviously did.
Okay, so. All right. What are your kids now, Doctor?
Well, one of them was killed in an accident. The daughter, Vanessa, was killed in an automobile accident about 3 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, sir.
Yes.
And what about your other?
And then the son, he's in Cleveland also.
Okay. Do you keep in contact with him?
Well, not. He doesn't like to write, but he used to while he was still in high school, but now he's out of high school, and he's working on his own. I hear from my daughter that he's doing fine with his two children.
Okay. All right. Well, sir, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Does anybody have a question? All right, so... We have a number of people in the room today. Does anyone here a supporter for Mr. Kojanis? We have quite a few people, so I'm going
to... Well, a lot of you, and still some of my patients and friends communicate with me.
Okay, well, that's good. We don't have any letters from your family or any supporters, so we didn't get any letters for you.
Well, I didn't ask for anyone.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. We also have with us on the phone, we have a representative from the Mojave County Attorney's Office, and we also have a number of victim representatives. So I'm going to...
We have about six or seven victims that will speak, and then I think the county attorney will go at the end.
We'll go at the end. Okay. Well, then let's start with whoever. Would you like to organize that, Ms. Moon?
I think they have an idea.
Okay.
Speak first.
Whoever would like to come up, please. So please just state your name for us.
Good morning. My name is Ryan. I'm speaking on behalf of the victim's father, Richard Rosen.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This letter is to bring to your attention the many horrific criminal acts perpetrated by Michael Kojanis in his personal life, as well as the numerous criminal allegations brought against him while practicing medicine. This man murdered my precious firstborn daughter, as well as a close friend of the family. He cruelly cut them both down in the prime of their lives. Deborah was a young and vibrant, caring mother, a thoughtful and dutiful aunt, a beautiful sister, and a cherished daughter. Both she and her family friend, John Brown, held great promise as productive members of society. My daughter, Deborah, was married to Michael Kajanis for a number of years. She gave birth to two lovely children, and she was a loyal, faithful wife to Michael while she helped him to build his medical practice. Unfortunately, during the entirety of their marriage, she suffered at Michael's abusive hand. When she decided she could no longer endure his treatment and fearing for her daughter and her children's safety, she left Michael, filed for divorce. Michael was extremely angry over my daughter's attempt to keep her family safe, compounded by his failing medical practice and his legal malpractice suits. He began making threats to Deborah, Mr. Brown, and others. In December 1992, Michael carried out his premeditated attack, forcing his way into the home of a family friend and viciously executing my daughter and John Brown in front of the three children while they all pleaded for their lives. As the children hysterically begged their father to spare their mother, he emptied the contents of his firearm into my daughter, reloaded his pistol, and then repeated this heinous act by murdering Mr. Brown. He then leveled his weapon at Deborah's oldest son, Shelby, who is in the courtroom today, who also was pleading for Michael to spare their lives. This first-degree premeditated murder of my daughter and Mr. Brown has haunted and tortured me these many years. The damage caused to Deborah's three children has been incalculable. The trauma they endured has been so severe that it impacted nearly every aspect of their lives. The tremendous sense of loss felt by Deborah's sister, her mother, and myself have negatively impacted us forever, but this is but a speck of the damage Michael has left in his wake. Deborah and Michael's daughter, Vanessa, constantly suffered from the abhorrence of this murder. She was never able to overcome the thoughts that plagued her, causing acute fear and low self-esteem, which led her down a dangerous path towards drug and alcohol addiction. Vanessa often made statements that she would rather be dead than to live without her mother. She also lamented the memories of her only visit with Michael while he was in prison. Accompanied by their aunt, Diana, Michael's two children had to endure Michael espousing how he thought, quote, Diana was a fat pig who did not deserve to live, and that, quote, if he had to do it all over again, he would have killed the entire family. Words alone cannot express how each of the children's lives have been destroyed by this monster. The stress of losing my beloved daughter caused me to have an emotional breakdown and attempting to care for the grandchildren. None of the family have been able to forgive Michael for his terrible deeds. We all did the best we could to put this putrid issue out of our minds and somehow pick up the pieces of our broken lives. While Michael sat in prison, supposedly earning himself good behavior credits, the family suffered while knowing that Michael has never shown any remorse for his actions, in fact, quite the contrary. Shortly after Michael's transfer to Florence State Prison, Michael was documented by Arizona Department of Corrections Officer Junior Alexander, who observed Michael telling other inmates he was, and I quote, proud of what he had done, and that he would do it again if given the opportunity. Michael has proven himself to be a truly heartless individual. He is capable of terrible atrocities. My question to the parole board would be this. What is a just sentence for the first-degree premeditated murder? When the special circumstances include him committing these acts in front of three young children? When he has continued to make threats of violence against the family of the victims even decades later? Would you feel it was a just sentence if the murderer of your family received 12 and a half years for causing so much chaos and destruction? As the father of Deborah, the grandfather of Shelby, Socrates, and Vanessa, I ask that this board think about the terrible pain and suffering this man has brought to my family, as well as to the family of John Brown. I ask you to look in your hearts when asking yourselves, what is a fair punishment for someone who is capable of such animalistic brutality? I ask you to consider whether or not this man has any business walking back into our free civil society. On behalf of my entire family and decent people everywhere, we ask that you please do the right thing. Continue Michael's punishment by leaving him exactly where he is now. He deserves to spend his final days behind bars where he can be kept away from society. I plead for my children, my grandchildren, and the Brown family that you will all make the right decision. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Rosen? Mr. Johnson has questions.
So that was just one statement that there's threats being made to the family even decades after he's been incarcerated. Can you tell us about that?
There's documentation on record by Officer Junior Alexander from Arizona Department of Corrections in the Florence unit that he had made continued threats against the family. This would have been as recently as the early 2000s.
Okay. So were those by phone or?
I'm not aware. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I just know they were documented while they happened in the prison.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay. Mr. Quinones has a question.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Sir, just a follow-up question based on something you said during your statement. Are you saying that he said that he would have killed the entire family, meaning the children that were visiting him in prison, right to their faces?
No. What we were to understand was that he was saying that if he had to commit this murder over again, he would have killed the entire family who was present at the time, which included his three young children. That's how they were to interpret this.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good morning, sir. Please state your name.
My name is Richard Rosen.
Okay.
I'm the father of Deborah. A couple of weeks ago, I received a letter from court stating that there was going to be a hearing, a parole hearing, that I didn't quite understand how this could possibly happen. I don't understand how anybody could do a heinous murdering, first-degree murder of two people. One of them was my daughter. And 25 years later, he has a parole hearing to make me walk from prison. I try to balance this thing out and try to make it work. I'm the type of person that balances everything. I just don't balance in my head. I can't speak too long. That's why I asked my grandson to read what I wrote down. I don't understand how anybody could do a heinous first degree murder of two people and be eligible for 25 years. That's 12 and a half years per person for murdering, first degree murder, two people. I appreciate you listening to my, he destroyed my family. We keep it together the best way we can. It was still hurts right today. I've been able to, after a few years, I had a breakdown. After a few years, I set this thing aside. It was still there every day. But I could go on with my life. Approximately 3 weeks ago, the letter came and come right back in my face again. I can't. It's hard to function. I do appreciate you listening to me, and I pray to God that he stays right where he's at. Thank you very much for your time and trouble. I can't talk anymore.
Thank you for coming, and it is your right to be heard, and we want to hear from you. So,
please.
So thank you. Thanks so much. Do you have any question?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
If you need to sit down, I did want to add something. I just didn't want to. What I wanted to state was, and it's certainly not to be defensive on behalf of the board, it's that the determination of a 25-year to life sentence was made by the judicial branch, so to speak. We represent the executive branch. Under that ruling, it's Mr. Kojianis' right to receive a parole hearing. So we certainly understand that this is traumatizing, and we will take everything into consideration, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much for your time and trouble.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good
Can you state your name, please?
I'm Mike Brown, the son of John Brown. And like everybody else has said, this is really hard to relive. And I'd just like to say that, you know, I was woke up at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night that night. My mom telling me that my dad was murdered. It was one of the hardest things I've ever gone through. And then to sit and go through a trial and listen to this guy drag everybody through the mud, it's been a hard thing. Had a lot of hard times dealing with, you know, all of it, and feeling so cheated out of life that I wish my father was here today to see my son. And he can't be, but the one thing I know is that I see the things that, you know, that guy's, the harm he's caused everybody, to his own children. He's never even once told his own children he was sorry for anything he did. You know, many years prior to, there was record during the trial of him having incidences where he freaked out on other doctors during people in surgery. The one thing that I noticed looking back on his history, you know, unlike the rest of them, we kind of just put it aside because we didn't want to give him the time of day to even waste thought of that man being free. And now that it's here, it's just, it's not, doesn't seem fair. I understand, you know, you guys saying the judicial and the executive branch. Anyways, it's, I just feel like, you know, there's no way that he can get out and function in society. My grandmother, the elderly woman, the Rosencrantz, all them that are, you know, let them live their lives, the rest of what they have left in peace, and not have to worry about this guy. You know, he bailed himself out of jail with supposedly no money. He was able to hire high-paid attorneys, yet he had two public defenders claiming that he had no money. It started out as, you know, it was self-defense, that didn't work. It was, he had Alzheimer's, that didn't work. It was, you know, everything down the line. And basically, I feel like we were cheated at the time with the first prosecuting attorney after things got rolling finally says, well, he'd adopted his one and only child through that doctor, and we changed. And he was kind of the one telling us not to go for the death penalty in the beginning because there was that slight chance that if he got off, he would walk. And I just don't feel like, you know, two life sentences is, I don't think there's any time you could put on somebody's life. And I just know it's not the right thing. And thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for testifying, sir. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you, sir. Could you state your name, please?
Dorothy Brown. I'm Dorothy Brown's mother.
Thank you so much.
The hardest thing about this is, this man is a manipulator. When he was arrested that night, he spent two nights in jail, and like my grandson just said, the sad part was he got a prosecuting attorney that had, he had gave them two babies. He was a doctor in our town. We're all from Kingman. It's a small town. And he was out, without bond, was out in 2 days. And for a year, my family and the Rosen family and all of us had to listen to this man. He would sit in front of my business, just as wise and never forgiving. He thought he had a right to do this. I can't even bear to think that he will be back in Kingman with his daughter. And I don't blame her. We've all suffered. I don't blame her at all. But I surely do not want to see this man walk in our streets again for quite some time. And I hope we don't have to do this again for another year. And on and on. Good, let us rest. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Diana Jaquez, sister of Deborah Kajamas, one of the victims. I had a long conversation with Socrates and Shelby, two of Deborah's children, and I know that it's been so difficult that Socrates couldn't even stand up here and make his own statement, so I'm going to reply what he had told me. First of all, I would really like to remind you that this man committed this act in front of his young children without any regard for their safety. Shelby, Vanessa, and Socrates had to witness this violent act that left them without a mother to support, love, or raise them. Probably the most striking out of my conversation with the two boys is that now, as adult children, after 25 years, they never once heard that inmate Pajamas was sorry for anything that he had done. Living and growing up in a small town, Vanessa couldn't handle the depression, and I know that someone already spoke with that. She and her brothers had to live with the shame and embarrassment of living in Kingman and working at the very hospital where inmate Kajanas held so much influence. Socrates said to me that the only reason that he remained in Kingman as an adult was to take care and keep an eye on Grandpa, who was so devastated by this act. And that there continues to be a threat in Socrates' mind to his family, to his well-being. If inmate Kajanas is released, Socrates feels that the threat is so strong that he'll have to move out of state to protect his family. Some of the other things that we talked about was, as inmate Kajanas himself stated, that he continues to have strong influence in the community by people who write him letters and continue to contact him. If he was going to seek his medical license back, that influence in the county and splitting the one side against the other and the potential violence that could create could be astronomical. I have to relay just a short thing that happened some 2 years after this initial act was December 9th, 92. A lady came up to my mother in the grocery store and said, "Oh, Ruth, I am so sorry for what happened to Deborah." And in the next breath, she said, boy, you know, isn't that horrible what they're doing to Mike? They got him in county jail. And you know what? He really had to put everything he had up so he could post bail and get out to help take care of all the babies in our community. This was repeated over and over and over again. At the time of this act, Mike was 60 plus, and he was unable to control his impulses. Mike is not the normal criminal that you might see come across this. He's educated, he's smart. He, in his past, has been extremely manipulative of the system to get what he wanted, to push right to the edge of the envelope. What makes makes us think that now he's been able to change anything in that personality flaw. He's spent 25 years in prison, and he may have actually gained some new skills to be more manipulative about what he does. What I ask today, on behalf of my family, the safety of my family, knowing that he has continued to make threats, knowing that in our hearts he truly continues to be a threat to my family and society, that you push, that you decline this request, and that you push back his future clemency hearings at least to the year mark, so the family has a chance to kind of wrap their heads around all of this process it and determine what they're going to do as we go forward with future clemency hearings. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Any questions? All right, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just
my name is Laura Markhurst.
Thank you.
I'm John Brown's little sister. Pretty much all the bases has been covered. Other than it wasn't just his children in the household, there were three other children in the household also that belonged to the homeowner. And I would like to go along with the statement of during this time, during the trial afterwards, he has never expressed any remorse. And this has been, I feel like I'm kind of not in the right place to have sympathy, but these children, my nieces and nephew, his own children, what they have gone through their whole life at his hands, is just unforgivable. And I hope that we can have a stay where he isn't eligible, where we don't have to deal with this every year that, or every 6 months, that we have a year away from this to regroup again, and that he isn't out in the public where he can be a risk. You know, he had a lot to lose then, and he felt if he had the right to do this. Now at his age and what he has, what's to keep him from repeating this? He has nothing to lose. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Any questions? All right, thank you, ma'am. Anyone else? You're good to go?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
Are you still
here? Yeah, I'm here.
You probably had us on mute, and that's fine. Would you like to give some testimony, sir?
I would.
Thank you.
Shall I begin?
Yes, please go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, I appreciate everyone's time. I know that these are very difficult and emotional hearings, not only for the victims and everyone that's there, but also for the board that has to hear these things. I will keep it brief and try not to be repetitive as to what you've already heard. Dr. Kojanis lost his medical license when he was about 60 years of age. And because of losing his license, he had to go down to Tucson, Arizona and leave Kingman to try to get his license back. At that time, his wife, Debbie, who was quite a bit younger than him, moved out along with their two twins and moved into a house belonging to Debbie Kojanis. So we have a second Debbie. John Brown was living there at that time. When Dr. Kojanis came back, he found out that his wife had left along with the twins, Socrates and Vanessa, who were both 7 years of age. But he didn't walk in on anything. He found out that his wife had left him. She probably wasn't coming back. And he was angry about that. And 3 weeks later, he went over there along with his teenage stepson, Shelby, and Joe Rover there, heavily armed. Both victims in this case were unarmed. Dr. Kojonis shot Debbie and John a total of 9 times. He shot Debbie in front of their two twins, Vanessa and Socrates, who were 7 years of age. Those kids had to live with that the rest of their lives. As you've heard, Vanessa died 3 years ago in a car accident. The one thing that struck me when I listened to Dr. Kojonis after all these years, because I was the prosecutor back then, is that he's still not accepting responsibility. You specifically asked him to tell his story. And what did he do? He told the story about discipline going on, that he overheard some comments. This is a story that was not told to law enforcement. This is not the story he was telling at the time. In fact, one of the witnesses overheard him say, after he killed John Brown, and I quote, "This is the last marriage you'll ever break up." So today he's trying to make it sound like there was something going on with discipline with his kid, and he was angry about it. Now, I would point out that anytime you have broken up relationships, affairs, people going through a divorce, when you have custody issues, there's oftentimes issues assimilating into new households. We get angry, people get angry about the treatment of their children, but this wasn't about that. This was about his jealousy and his rage. And he waited 3 weeks and he went over there, and as I mentioned, shot these people a total of 9 times. He's not accepting responsibility. You didn't hear any remorse. You didn't hear any change. He never told you today he was sorry for it. In fact, he's pretending like he doesn't remember that he shot his wife. Now, if the story he told you today was true, that he overheard a couple of comments and felt his kids were being mistreated, again, a story he's not told before, at least not to law enforcement that day, if that happened, if he went over there to do something about it, then the only person he would have done anything about was John Brown. And a normal person would go over there and maybe yell at John Brown and say, "Hey, leave my kids alone." Or he could have talked to his wife and said, "Hey, make sure that, you know, you're taking care of the kids and John's not disciplining them." But no, he ends up shooting Debbie. He shot John Brown. He shoots Debbie. Then John Brown got out of the house, went around a retaining wall by the property, and Dr. Kojonis went around that wall, tracked him down, probably by the blood spots, and finished him off, shooting him more times. This is not somebody who did not understand what he was doing. He went over there to kill both of them, and he knew he was killing his wife. Today, he's like, "Oh, I don't even remember. I guess I'm the only one that had a gun, but I don't remember shooting her." If he was upset at John Brown and that was a true story because of any discipline issues, that's the only person that would have been shot. And there would have been no reason to shoot his wife 4 or 5 times. I think he shot her 4 times and John Brown 5 times. The only other thing that I want to mention is that for whatever reason, Judge Mike Irwin gave Dr. Kojonis concurrent life sentences. These are 2 separate murders. And if he was to get out now, he basically has served the minimum sentence, which is the 25 of the 25 to life, for 1 murder. But he killed 2 different people. And you got a chance today to hear from the families of both of them and seeing the impact that this has had. And you're only hearing a part of it today. So I appreciate your time and listening to me and listening to everyone else. And I really hope that you consider the fact that he cold-bloodedly shot down 2 unarmed people in front of 3 kids, including 2 7-year-olds, that have to live with the fact at least the one that's still alive, and the other one until 3 years ago, with the fact that their mother's dead and that their father was the one that killed them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Smith. It always helps when we can have someone who's so familiar with the case, with so many details. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions. Any questions for Mr. Smith? Okay, thank you so much. And is there anyone else who wanted to speak? Everyone's had a chance to speak that wanted to. Okay, we're back to you, Mr. Kojanis. Are you still there? Okay, good. So, sir, we're coming toward the end of your hearing, and I want to give you the chance to make a final statement to the board. And specifically, we'd like to hear why you think you should receive parole, sir. Could you tell us?
Well, first of all, there were a lot of erroneous statements made. There were not twins. One was seven, the other was nine. And the prosecutor has it all wrong. And the fact I had my license is retired, it was not revoked, by no means.
Okay, sir.
And the costs that were stated by the victims, I appreciate their fees. I understand that a lot of them were erroneous statements, were not true, or not factual. I did not get a divorce. I was not aware of a divorce. I have no papers. There's no papers indicating that she had a divorce. Filed a divorce for us at the medical center in Tucson. So that's news to me today.
Okay. Sir, is there anything else you'd like to tell us as to why you should be paroled? What's different about you now than back then?
Well, I was judged by my peers and found guilty, yes, but I was sentenced 25 to life, and I assumed that I was being entitled to be released after 25 years if my behavior was exemplary, and I have no idea why. I can understand why the victims feel as they do, but I have no remorse. I have mock remorse for what happened, and I accept responsibility. And every day for the 25 years, I regretted it, but I have no idea. But what else can I do? Say I was truly, truly sorry it happened.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Mr. Kojanis, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all of our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we've not discussed your case before right now. So what we ask for you is that you stay on the phone, but remain silent, and the board will be back with you in just a moment.
Yes.
Okay, so the board is now on discussion. This is a tragic case. Involving two murders. Mr. Kojanis, and this is just my opinion at this point, I'm not hearing remorse from Mr. Kojanis, sincere remorse. I hear him saying the words, but I don't hear it in his voice. I am not seeing him as a good candidate for parole based on everything that we've heard in the hearing today, but I'd certainly listen to any input from fellow board members. Mr. Kojanis.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. I think what I'm going to say is going to echo much of what you said already, but after listening to the totality of this case, I believe that based on the status of Mr. Kojanis' personal development in the correction system, he continues to be a threat to the community, that he's truly deserving of a life sentence, and I've heard nothing in the way of rehabilitation or remorse by Mr. Kojanis. And as one voting board member, I would like to qualify that I do not believe that good behavior discipline equals rehabilitation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Quinones. That was specifically why I was asking what's changed about you, and I didn't hear a response to that. Mr. Neal, did you have a comment to add? Or?
No, it isn't. That's Mr. Quinones
summed it up pretty well. Yeah. Anything for me, Mr. Johnson, to add? Okay, I'm going to make a motion then that parole 412A, 411, and home arrest be denied, and that we do ask for a one-year set-off as this crime occurred in 1993, so it's eligible for a one-year set-off. So that is my motion, the discussed reasons. Seconded by Mr. Johnson.
Agreed.
And agreed by Mr. Neal and Mr. Quinones. Now, the reasons for the denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life. I'm going to say serious and deviant offense, given that there were children present, trauma to the victims, serious bodily injury, multiple victims. Let's see here. I'm going to check lack of programming, given that we've not seen any very, very minimal programming involved. And poor or no release plan. And no family or community support system evident. There is no one here today supporting, and we have no letters in the packet either. So those would be the reasons, unless board members want to add anything to those.
We mark victim harassment.
We could mark victim harassment as well, yeah. Given that there was the history as discussed.
Mr. Johnson, I think that's on point.
Okay. All right, and Mr. Kogianis?
Yes.
The board has voted to deny your parole, a general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, sir. Did you hear the reasons for denial?
Yes, but I don't think that you have the fact from my side as the, if you read the record, it was not as the district attorney stated.
Well, sir, he was present at the trial. He's an agent of the court.
No, the children were not present, number one. The children were not twins.
Well, sir,
one was seven,
sir,
and the other was nine.
Sir, your hearing is coming to a conclusion. I just want to let you know that because of the date of the crime, the parole board has the option to set off your next hearing, so it'll be in approximately 1 year that you'll be eligible to come before this board again, sir.
All right, thank you.
All right, sir, if you put the 03 back on the phone, we'd appreciate it. Thank you so much, and your hearing is concluded. Thank you, Mr. Smith. We appreciate your testimony very much. And thank you to all the victims who testified and everyone who was here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So this hearing is concluded.